He did a maaser, you know. In other words, he performed an action so that obviously he has every intention of using it as avodah zarah. So therefore it is prohibited as a place of avodah zarah. Ki also Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, when Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda came from Eretz Yisrael, Umar Rabbi Yochanan. So again, I have another quotation from Rabbi Yochanan. Even though we say that if somebody bows down to an animal, to a living animal, right, he did not make them prohibited. This is the more, the more lenient view, remember, that we had. But what if he take this animal and he made them as a substitute for a real idolatry, for a real idol, in that case, it becomes osur, comes prohibited. Ki osa rabid, and when rabin came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, Pligibor, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi, he says, there's a machlokes, he says, point of argument between Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yosef, and the rabbis, the sages. Chad Omar, one says Chalifin Asurin, that if you substitute, something for Naveda Zorah, it's prohibited. But Chalifin Butorin, but if you substitute something for something which was previously prohibited, then in that particular case, it's permissible. The Chadomar, the other authority, says, "Atil Chalifi Chalifi Nadei Asurin." He says, "No matter how many substitutions you make, they're all prohibited." My Tabo, what is the reason? Demand Omar Chalifi Chalifi Asurin. The last opinion that we had, namely that substitutes for substitutes are prohibited. So, Omar Kor, this is how he interprets the pasuk. He says, Torah says, you shall become cherem, in other words, prohibited, just like it. So if the it is prohibited, right, then in that particular case, you are also prohibited for it, right. Kol shato mehaya mimeno, Arehu Kamo Shato Mehoyamin, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to know how the vowel of this one. Everything that came from it, it is just like it. The Edok, on the other hand, the one who is more lenient, said only the first degree, but not the second, right? Omar Kro, he interprets the Pasuk as Hoyisa Cheirim Kamohu, which means kamo hu, like it, hu, it, velo chalifi chalifin, but not further substitutes for it. The idach, so now, and how about the other authority who said, it just continues and continues? He says, haru, so what does he do with the word haru? He says, haru beboyle, mute, olo vikile haker, he says, that's for something else. That has nothing to do with idolatry, but it's in order to exclude from this general prohibition of Khalif Khalif and Orla and Kilei HaKerem. What is Orla? Orla we know. The first 3 years that it gives fruit, the fruit is prohibited. And then, of course, the fourth year, the Kerem revived, you're supposed to take it, to Yerushalayim, and that's one thing. And what is Kilei HaKerem? That is, that you're not supposed to grow two things in the same plot of ground. In other words, in a vineyard, you don't plant wheat or something like that, okay? There has to be a separation.
The mixing of
right, it's Kilayim, exactly, right. For a person who says, you make a separation between one another or something like that.
Right. Put up a little fence of some sort.
Whatever, or a furrow or something, or move the plot over someplace else or something. but you know, not in the immediate vicinity where the roots of one will intermingle with the other. That's the point, because that's kodayim. That is,
yeah, that.
Yeah.
Does that carry forward into the planting of gardens?
Yeah, yeah, it should. It should.
So you have a garden that has to be only roses or only...
No, no. First of all, you're talking about flowers.
Flowers is a
yeah,
general.
Right, right.
It's okay going to flowers.
Right. The Torah specifically prohibits it's a vineyard with, you know, some other kind of a plant, particularly a food plant, you know, wheat, oats, or something like that, together. However, by extension, it applies only to a general mixing.
Well,
but
if you have a garden, you shouldn't be growing tomatoes on the side.
Well,
or is that
the truth is, we're not that market
not.
These days.
Okay.
We're not today,
that,
right.
Yeah.
But, you know, if on a commercial basis or something like that, then there's no question. I mean, that, you know, you have different plots devoted to different things. Right. Question also, I mean, whether this applies outside of Eretz Yisrael or doesn't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. This is something that we had years ago that we discussed that. Okay. Yeah. Right. So that's Kirei Hakar. Right. She'im Mecharam. Let's say that he sold, you know, the fruit that developed. The Kiddush with Mehen, and then he used the fruit in order for the money that he was get for selling it in order to betroth a woman, Mikudeshes, she is betrothed. Now this goes into something that we had the Gemara when we learned Kedushin. Oh boy. The question is, you know, we know that today, what do we use? We use a ring. For a marriage, right? For betrothal, tradition. In ancient days, not everybody used rings. First of all, not everybody could afford a ring. Okay? So, the idea is that if you give the kala something which is worth at least a pruta, that's worth at least, you know, a certain minimum value, then in that particular case, she is mekudeshes. But then the Gemara goes into a discussion of certain things that would not be valid because they are prohibited against the law of the Torah. You understand? So, in that particular case, the question is now with these things. If you sold the fruit, it came through an avera. It's no question. I mean, in other words, he should have uprooted it and, you know, not... but he sold it. So do we say that because this fruit is as a result of an avera, therefore it is useless, but it's the money that he got from, because I'm talking about that. He didn't give her fruit, he gave her, you know, he gave her money, you understand? But the money is from the sabbath fruit. So are we to say that because, you know, to begin with, he should not have sold that because it was a violation of the law, but nevertheless, this fruit itself validates the marriage, validates the betrothal, okay? So in other words, the money is a substitute, you understand? This is the idea. It's a substitute for the fruit, and yet we say that it's okay, it's useful. So in other words, this would mean that according to the authority who says that the Khalifin, that is prohibited, but the Khalife Khalifin, in other words, then what you sold that for, you understand, is permitted, so that would validate his point of view, okay? So, right. Yeah. Now, Khalife Khalifin means that, look, you sold it, right? And then you bought something else, and you sold that, and you bought something else, and you sold that, and so we'll see in another moment. Okay, right? Okay. The idach And how about the other one who says Khalifa Khalifin is prohibited, right? So what does he do with all of the Kila Yakarim? He says, Lo Tzarich, he says, I don't need this teaching in order to say that they are not in the same category. Miyutan Hadyale Aru Avedas Krechovin Ishmiis. Inasmuch, he says, we have idolatry and we have Shmiis, the law of the seventh year. And the Sheikh Subna Boy and Kiyachot, right? And these are two different psukim which deal with a similar subject, okay? In other words, if you violated, you know, the seventh year by planting something in the seventh year and selling the fruit, you understand? You sold it, which, because of the Shmiis, you're not supposed to sell the fruit that grows over there. Of course, remember, this applies to us as well. So that this is a tremendous problem in Eretz Yisrael even today, I know that today. But more and more people are keeping Shmiis over there, so that they have to be supported one way or another. And, you know, they try different ways in order to be able to get around the laws. For example, hydroponics. Because hydroponics, you know, it's not actually in the soil itself and so on. So, if you were to sell Shavuot fruit, which is prohibited, right, then that would continue the prohibition. If you bought something with that, with the guilt that you sold, and that would be prohibited according to the one who says, you know, Khalifa Khalifa Nasur. Okay, and this is the example that he gives. He says, all right, he says, all law and Kiliakim are not, they don't fit into the same category, because we're talking about something which is even more severe, shall we say, namely idolatry or the law, you know, violation of Shvius. He says, these are Shneksum and Abloyim Kiyachot. They're two psukim that deal with the same subject. And we have a general principle that the Chod Shneksum and Abloyim Kiyachot, that when you have two psukim that deal with the same subject, ein melamdin, you cannot learn one from the other. You need separate ideas behind each and every one. You cannot simply say that these two are analogous, they're the same. No. They have prohibitions, but for different reasons, and therefore you cannot, you know, equate them. So that's the idea of idolatry, as we've been talking about all this time. Shavuot, as far as the seventh year products, it's written, Ki Yovel He, Kodesh Tiyelochem, right? That the Yovel is, it is the Yovel, it's the Jubilee, and it's to be holy unto you. Ma Kodesh, Tzofes is Domov. The also, just something that is holy, then it literally it hangs on to its money. In other words, the money cannot be used for anything, right? The also is prohibited. So Av Shvius, so likewise Shvius, professes as Donero, right? Also puts a hold on the money that you get from it, lots of it, and it is prohibited. So now they say, Imar Kodesh, Tefes is Dama, the Yosef Bechulin, right? So if, what is holy, it puts a hold on its money, but there are things, however, okay. This is the counter argument, namely what? Something which is holy, it literally it holds on to its money, the Yotzei Lechulin, and in it itself can become profane, used for profane use. In other words, the first argument says that you can't do anything with the money, right? Second argument says, okay, the object itself can be redeemed from the temple. There are cases, right, like that. And the money becomes sanctified. The money has to be used for temple purposes, okay? But the object itself, not. So why can't we argue that Avshavius, Tephesa says, Demervius and Cholif, right? That product of the seventh year, why can't we say that, you know, the money is going to be devoted for something connected with Shavius, but the fruit itself becomes Cholin, becomes, in other words, used for ordinary purposes. Why can't we say that? So he says, Talmud Loman, because the Torah says, Kodesh Tiyah. And Tiyah very means Bahama Yosor. Exactly the way it is, that's what it has to be. Bahama Yosor Tahay. The same thing, I mean, we've had in connection with the Shema Yisrael too. The Hoyu Hadvorim Ha'ele, right? Say that in the second paragraph. Hoyu advorim ve'ela, asher lo yitzav hayom, aladech, and so on, so on. They say, what is v'hoyu? V'hoyu means k'ahava yisoh. In other words, these words are exactly the way they are, and not to be interpreted another way. I mean, these words ought to be. Or, in the case of a divorce, that has to be done in a certain way. This is what we learned in the Gemara in Sota, for example. That it has to be in a certain way. This is what the Hoyo or whatever, Tiyah and so on and so forth implies. Exactly the way it is, and not in another way. For Yad Bo Eila, where it says Chavoyah, so to say, that's the question. Should Krishna be recited in Hebrew only because that's the way it's written in the Torah? Or do you have permission to recite Krishna in any language? Well, that's the difference, you know, between Shema. How do you interpret the word Shema? Shema can be interpreted, you know, Shema v'cholosh atoshemeya, in other words, in any language that you understand, right? And there's another teaching that says Shema. Why does it say Shema? It means that your ears should hear what your mouth is saying, which means not only that you should say it, but it also means that you should it should enter into your own head, you know, what it is that you're saying. So that's Bahayasov. This is exactly the way it is, and that's the way it has to be. Or Kesas, for example, let's say, Lokaf Bethiru Shviyiz Boser. All right, he sold produce of the seventh year, and he bought with it meat, right? Eilu Ve'ilu Mizbarim Bashviyiz. The law is that in that particular case, both of them have to be made hefker in the seventh year. What do I mean by made hefker? We have various rules over there in connection with Shviyiz, based upon the Torah. Of course, it's written over there, in other words, to your cattle in the field. That's what it's written, okay? Should be for you and also for your cattle in the field. So from this we learn a law that when the cattle have no more what to eat than what, then you have to take out of your own house, out of the own place where you're keeping the food, and put it out for them. But this applies also to poor people. If they don't have what to eat, you have to be matkir, in other words, you have to give up your own personal property and give it for them, right? So what he's saying over here is that if you have fruit the seventh year, you sold it, you bought meat with it, then both of these have to become hefker once there's nothing for other people to eat. You have to put it out over there. That's what it means by misbarin, okay?
So it was permitted if there were poor people,
yeah,
to use the fruit of the seventh.
Right, right.
You don't use the fruit itself, if you sell it and buy something
no,
else.
No, 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 they could use the fruit itself too.
They could use the fruit itself.
Yeah, the food, whatever it may be, they have the right to come into the field and take whatever they need to eat.
Right.
Not to sell, yeah. Right, but to eat for them without their permission to come in, right. Look at the boss of Doggy. Let's say he sold the meat and he bought fish with it.
Yotza Basar, Nichtasa Dogen. Okay? And lo and behold, then now the prohibition applies to what?
Fish.
To the fish. Bidogim Yayin, let's say he sold the fish then for wine. So Yotza Dogen, Nichtas Yayin. And it says now the prohibition is on the wine. The Yayin Shemin, he sold it and he bought oil with it, olive oil, right? So Yotza Yayin and Nichtas Shemin. Okay. So now that's. So, okay, son, how does this work out? He says, Achron Nispas Bashmis, right? Ufri Atzmo Osir. He says, not only is the last one in the series prohibited, but the original fruit itself is still prohibited. Well, as we see, you know, they want to make sure that people are not going to take advantage of the law concerning fees. The Yidduch and the other one, is Kosovar, according to his opinion, Shnei Ksuvin Aboyin Kiyachum Alamdin, he says, we have two psukim that deal with a similar subject, so you learn one from another. Before we said Ein Melamdin, right? So his opinion is that Melamdin, you can learn the same thing. The Yitzterech, and therefore we need to say that these things are not the same as what started off the whole business about the Avodah Zarah. If you use it for something or other, is it still prohibited or not prohibited? Can you use it or you can't use it, and so on and so forth.
Well, we still want
right.
The two opinions, and we should
yes.
And the one though.
Correct. Correct. Correct.
One says this, one says that.
You're right. Absolutely right.
You're right, too.
Yeah, right. Yes. Du bist gerecht. Du bist gerecht. It's like Peter gerecht. Well, the classic story, right?
The
Rav who had
the
to...
Right.
Yeah,
no,
right.
This is the one about the wife couldn't understand how he told the one, each party, you're right and you're right.
Right.
And she says, my husband, how could you tell them both that they're both right?
Right. The Besechet Gerecht, right. Okay. Okay, we'll start with the new Mishnah next week. Very interesting Mishnah, incidentally. Okay. Tonight is the 3rd of January, the year 2007. Where did the days go? And we will now continue with the new Mishnah that we find, Maseches Avodah Zarah. Daf Dundalad Omid Beis. Okay? In other words, 54b. Middle of the page, we have a new Mishnah. Shora Lewis Hatskenim Beromi. Alright, so a picture. You have great Chachamim who are now living in Rome. Of course, they're talking about after the dispersion. But even so, there was already a Roman Jewish community long before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. How do we know? Well, first of all, because we have a reference in Pirkei Avos to a Macha Ben Cheresh, and he's quoted already in the Gemara as well, and he was one of the Chachamim living in Rome. But secondly, I have to tell you, we have the testimony of people like Cicero, Caesar, and other Romans to testify to the Jewish community living in Rome, and Cicero the anti-Semite even defended Ganavim, who robbed the Eretz Yisrael as procurators for the Roman government, and he defended them in court. So we know. So we already have plenty of testimony to the fact, you know, that Jews were living over there. And to some of the Romans, the fact that a Jew kept Shabbos was an indication that they were too lazy to work. Gemara referring to people of this thought process talks about Shehi Pehi. What is Shehi Pehi? It's Rosh HaTevis, in other words, abbreviation. Jews don't want to work because Shabbos Hayom, that's the Shehi, Shabbos, and the Pei is, it's Purim Hayom. So for all the holidays, they want to take time off, which to the Romans was something they couldn't understand. The Romans did not, as far as they were concerned, the person had to work all day, or be lazy all day. It's either one. Naturally, you didn't find the ruling classes working. They were busy politicking, living the good life of the aristocrats, and so on and so forth. So, okay. But at any rate, so here there's a disputation right now between the philosophers in Rome, the Goyish philosophers, obviously, and the Chachamim. They have a disputation, okay? So, they asked the elders in Rome, meaning, you know, they asked the Chachamim over there, Yemein mitzoynei ba'avidus kechavim, lo meinam mevatlo. He says, look, you say you believe in the Rabbeinu Shalom, so tell me, if he doesn't want, if he dislikes Aveda Zorah, right, he dislikes idolatry, then why doesn't he simply abolish it from the world? After all, Rabbeinu Shalom can do everything, right? So let him abolish idolatry. Omru lahem. So what did Chachamim answer them? They said, Yilu the davar she'ein tzorach le'ilom b'yoyu avdim hoyim avatle. Says, if when they worship things that they don't really need, in other words, something that can't really help them in any way, but, you know, necessary things for the existence of the world and mankind, that's what they worship, then the Rabbeinu Shalom would have already, you know, gotten rid of it. But Harei Heinovdim, Lachamo, Lalevono, Lakechavim, Lamatzolos. But they worship the sun, they worship the moon, they worship the stars, they worship the planets. You know, I mean, what's this whole business with zodiac and so on and so forth? Or, you know, they worship Saturn and Mars and so on and so forth. I mean, the Venus, I have to tell you, I mean, they worship all these things. So, if that's the case, you want the Rabbeinu Shalom to destroy the world, to destroy the universe, because these people have foolish ideas? The world continues to exist as it's meant to exist, to work naturally, normally. And these foolish people who commit all kinds of evil deeds, the time will come when they'll have to pay for what they've done, and they'll have to face judgment. Dover Acher, another version, the same thing. Arei shegozal se'or shel chitim uzro bekarka. Okay, take the case of a person, he steals, let's say, a bushel. So, okay, it's a certain measure. It's actually probably bigger than one bushel, but let's say a bushel. A bushel of wheat was raw bekarka, and then he took this bushel and he planted it, he sowed it in the ground. Okay? Dinhu shelo titzmach. It's logical that it should not grow, because if this was stolen, then it should be punished not to grow, right? It's the argument. Ella, but Eilam kimin hogeg nehek, the hoileich, okay? the world continues to live according to the way it's, you know, the Beit Shalim intended it to work naturally. And those, you know, who those foolish people who did the wrong thing, eventually they're going to pay the penalty for it. Dover Acher, another thing. Oh, my mind, you know what? I skipped. My eye just went down because of the similarity. Okay, yeah. All right, gets back to the original things. My apologies, okay.
You didn't do it at the beginning of the Gemara.
Huh? No, I didn't. Right. Oh, I have to get back to the argument in the Mishnah. We didn't finish it yet. Okay. All right. So the argument that had been advanced, though, is, okay, things that are not important for the world, the Beit HaShalem could abolish it, right? But things that are important for the world, that they have to continue to function. This is what the Rebbe Yisrael wants to do. Okay. So far, that's what it says. Right. So, okay, so let the Rebbe Yisrael leave those things necessary for the world, and the, you know, destroy, get rid of those things that aren't necessary. So Abu Lahan, so the Chachamim answered them. He says, "Af onu machzik niday avdehen shel el." Right. In other words, he says, as Rashi explains, he says, "Look," he says, "we strengthen the hands literally of those who worship the sun, the moon, right? If we would see that all the other Aveda Zoras would be destroyed, right? And but only these would still remain, right? So we would agree with you, right? Sheomrim Tedu Shehein Elohus, these people who say they are gods, they are divinity. Sharei Heitloi Botlu. All right, I have to explain what actually they're saying right now. What he's saying is as follows. Okay, you in your argument, you say, all right, let the Rebbe Yisrael get rid of those things that are not necessary in this world, and keep those things that are necessary to the world. So what did the Chachamim answer them? What they're answering them is as follows. Look, if that were the case, we would only be strengthening your argument that what? That the sun, the moon, and so on, that they are truly deities. You understand? So, because the other things were destroyed, but why did he keep them? He keeps them because they are also they are deities. So we would only be lending support to your theories. So, therefore, this is not an argument that we could accept. So now the Gemara continues, and you know, the beginning is similar to what the Mishnah had to say. Tana Rabbanan, the sages taught us. This happens to be for the Tosefta now, the quotation. Shalu Pulosofin es Haskenim Baromi, you know, not the philosophers, you know. Notice over here, the Mishnah did not mention the word Pulosof, right? But the Tosefta, which remember comes from the same period as the Mishnah, right? Here already they use the word Pulosof. Okay, so. Yeah.
Were they, again, you think they were playing games with
it,
each other, these analogies?
To a certain extent, they were. I mean, but it's an intellectual game.
You know,
right.
We were talking about, you know, well, somebody would, if you destroy
Yeah.
All those things that are
right.
Not necessary.
Right.
Those things that are necessary will become worse.
Exactly.
I mean, that's
right.
That's an argument full of hope. I mean, I'm just wondering how serious they were about.
Obviously, there must have been all kinds of philosophical discussions between the Chacham and so on. Right. 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 Well, it's a very interesting Mishnah, very interesting Gemara, because that will have several examples of the different types of the questions, but all more or less on the central theme. So, all right, so now the philosophers asked the elders, in other words, the Chachamim in Rome, he says, Ima leheichem, ein mitzot avedis chachamim, right? If your God does not want avedis zora, mipnei ma'ena bevatlo, so why doesn't he destroy it for the world? So amud lehem, so what did Chachamim answer them? He says, ilu, the devotion and zorech lei hoyu avdim, areyu bevatlo, right? That if there's something that the world doesn't need, he could destroy it if he wanted. So, but look, what do they actually worship? They're worshiping Lachama, the sun, Lalavana, the moon, Lachichodim, the stars, Lamazolis, the planets. So, you want to eventually him to destroy the world because of fools? Ela oilam kimin hohoi neheg, right? But the world is meant to carry on according to the way God wants it to carry on. That's a normal way. Vishaitam shakil kulasini detain this adin, right? And the foolish people, you know, who have these crazy ideas, eventually they'll have to pay for them. Dovarachir, or this is why my eyes, you can see, ran right down, because, you know, that's like a repetition, more or less, of what we had. Another example. This, of course, was not mentioned. This is what my eye ran to before when it went down. Okay. Person steals a bushel of wheat. It's raw bakarka, and he plants it in the soil. Dinhu shaloi titzmach, right? So we would expect that it should not grow. Elo elam kimin hoge neheg, right? But nevertheless, it's going to grow. Why? The Beis Shalom wants the world to function in a normal way. And if seed is planted, naturally he wants, you know, the seed to grow so that it could be for the benefit of mankind. The shaitim shakilkalo, and the foolish people, you know, do all kinds of bad things or have all kinds of crazy ideas, then the day will come and we'll have to give judgment for it. Or another example. Okay. A man committed adultery with his neighbor's wife. Doesn't say neighbor, I mean somebody else's wife. Okay. Dinhu shalotisabir. So, by rights, she should not become pregnant. Okay? But the world has to go on functioning normally, and, you know, impregnation will take place, and so on. No matter, you know, who the father or the mother are. Right. And those fools who did wrong, eventually they're going to have to pay the penalty for it. I don't know Omar Reish Lakish, so this is like what Reish Lakish had to say. Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Beis Shalom says, Lo dayan lo rishoyim, she'osin zela sheni pumbi, elo shematrichin osi, machtimin osi ba'al korchi. Which means as follows. It's bad enough, lo dayan lo rishoyim, literally, it's not enough for it, but it's bad enough that the evil people, right, she'osin sela shali pumbi. This is based, of course, what is sela? Sela is a coin, okay? It's a coin. But as Rashi explains, Shosham Sela Shali Pumi says, Rosham Shali, in other words, my impression that I have, Shani Rosham Bo, okay? Uvalas, in Old French, it's called coin, which is actually like the English word coin over here, okay? It's like the word coin. So it says, Oysen Hefker Lechol Dover, all right? And they carry on, they do whatever it is that they feel like doing, in other words, without any care, you know, for what's right, what's wrong, and so on. So, Horotza Lachte Bo Yachto Bo, whoever wants to use the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's seal, or whoever wants to use this coin, which has, you know, a figure on it as a seal, Kolomi Sheboyen Al Eva Al Kochi, right? They, in other words, they commit adultery in spite of me, but nevertheless, you know, and they become parents as a result of it, right? They induce pregnancy. So what they're saying over here is, okay, what is the coin of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam? Okay, it's Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that one of the great wonders of creation is the fact that if a person, let's say he runs the mint, okay, so he has a pattern, whatever it is, and that stamps out one coin after another and so on and so forth, and all the coins are identical, okay? Well, Rebbeinu Shel Olam also has his coin, namely human beings, because it's written that Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, created man in his image, right? Boris Hodem Salma. So, that being the case, one of the great wonders is that even though each human being bears the stamp of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each and every one is different.
It's unique,
exactly. So this is what he means over here. He says, it's bad enough, he says, that human beings are created in my image, right? That's what the Sela means, the coin. Created in my image. And the result of it is that Rebbeinu Shel Olam created mankind with the ability to reproduce. So whether the reproduction was done licitly or illicitly, but nevertheless, it's for the benefit of mankind that mankind should be able to reproduce. This is what he's trying to say over here. So this is what he means when he says, Elo Olam Kimin Hoge Noheg, right? So the world, you know, simply carries on the way it's supposed to. Okay. Yeah. And when it says, you know, first of all, you know, Osin Sela Shali Pumi, they take my image publicly, but they force me to consent to something even against my will, the Al Korchi. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants people to do it the right way, to have families, you know, and so on and so forth. And these people, they cast a burden upon the Rebbeinu Shel Olam by doing things illicitly. Shaul Pilosophus Achod is Rabbi Gamliel. So now it comes to another story. A certain philosopher asked Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel happened, he was, of course, in his day that Nossi Eretz Yisrael, right, in other words, he was the head, he was the descendant of Hillel, and the head of the Beis Din and so on, and the head of the Sanhedrin. But he was also very close, had a lot of close contact with the Greek and the Roman authorities in his day. When I say Greek, it's not that the Greeks were the rulers, but in the eastern part of the Mediterranean, Greek was like a universal language, and of course Greek thought and so on, even though it was under Roman rule, but you know, Greek thought also permeated. So,
Greek words,
right,
like,
well, of course.
Sandal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pilosof. It's also Greek. Pilosof is also Greek.
Yeah, right, right.
Pardon me?
Daughter.
Rabin's daughter?
Her second name is Pilosof.
Is it?
Oh,
Pilosof? Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that. Right.
I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Okay. Is her husband really a philosopher? Yeah.
Didn't Gamliel II introduce the sighting of the new moon mathematically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about the when the
instead of everybody
right,
going
the charts out. That he made the moon and so on.
Yeah.
Right. Correct. Right. That's Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. There was plenty of, relationship, intercourse, if you wish, I mean, between, the Chachamim and the Greeks and the Romans and so on. Okay. The other day I picked up an old book that I bought by my old teacher, Shaul Lieberman. It's called Greek and Jewish Palestine. Ella would probably be interested if she could get a copy of that, right? And it shows how there are Gemaras, Midrashim, and things like that, where you could see, the Greek thought and the Hebrew thought, where there's a parallel between them.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Ah, that's a different story. We'll say that the Jewish thoughts came first. Okay. Okay. So, a certain philosopher asked Rabbi Gamliel, says, Kosu b'terashchem, says, it's written in your Torah, ki ad Hashem olakecha ish uchlohu, jil kadol, right? The Bein Shalelam is like a consuming fire, he is a jealous God. So, he asks him the following question, he says, b'pnei ma miskanei b'yodeho, b'yein, Misaknabo, he says. So tell me, why does Rabbeinu Shalom have to be jealous of those who worship the idols, right? He should not have to be jealous of them. After all, he's the Rabbeinu Shalom. So why does it say that the Rabbeinu Shalom is an El Kano, in this case, if he doesn't like Aveda Zara and so on? Why does he have to be jealous? He doesn't consider it to be wrong. Right. So Amaloi, so Rabbi Gamliel answered him, Em Shalcho Boshel. Okay, I'll give you an example, he says. Lamaha Domadova, that's what that abbreviation means. I mean, what can we compare this situation to? Lamelech Bosov Adon, a king, a human being, Shehoyelo Bein Echod, he had a son. And that son had a dog that he raised. Lolo shame al shame oviv, and guess what kind of a name he gave to the dog? His father's name. Shahu Dishba. And when the son would take an oath, Homer, he would say, V'chaye kelev abo, I swear by the life of my dog, my father. My father, the dog. K'sheshoma ha-melech al-mi hu-koes. Now, when the king heard about this, Who should he get angry with? Right? Allah Bainu Kais or Allah Kalafu Kais? Should he be angry with his son? Or should he be angry with the dog? Evi Omer. So we have to say, Allah Ben Hukawes, right? Becomes angry with the son. So, Omaloi, because the father, the king says to him, Kelevato Koreyoso, you call me a dog? Halo yesh bo mamash. And isn't, excuse me, I have to reinterpret what I said right now. So, Omaloi probably means that the philosopher said to him, what are you calling my idol, my idolatry, right? You're calling it a dog? Of course, you know, he made a comparison to calling it a dog. Halo yesh bo mamash. There is a reality in idolatry. In other words, idolatry really is based upon something real. Omalo, so he said, Omaro Iso, what did you see that gives you proof, you know, that there is truth in idolatry? So Omalo, he said, I'll tell you, Pa Machas, this is what the philosopher is saying, once it happened, that Naflo Teleko Beirenu. There was a fire in our town, the Nisrafo Kolhoye Kula, and the entire city was burnt. The Yosei Beis Avedas Kechovim Lai Nisra, but the temple of the idol, it was not burnt. So that is what? Proof that idolatry works, right? That's good, says the philosopher. So Amalo, so Rabbi Gamliel said, Em Sholocho Marshal, alright, I'll give you another marshal, give you another example, he says. The Ma'adova Deimer, what would it be like? He says, the Melech Boso Badom Shesocho Lo Bedina. A king has a rebellion within his country, right? Kishahu Usa Melchama, right? So when he makes war, Imachayim Usa or Mamesim, who is he making war against? The living or the dead? Who was that? Sahede Omer, of course, you have to say Imachayim Usa, right? He makes war with those who are living. So Amalei, so he said, Kelevato Koreyoso, right, again, you're calling in a dog? So he says, Meisato Koreyoso, call him a dead person? Imken Yavdenim in Hoelam, so why doesn't he destroy it for the world? So Amalo, so he said to him, Ilu Ledovo Shein Hoelam Tzorech Loi Hoyu Oivdin. If they would worship only those things that the world doesn't need, Hare Uvavata, the Rebbeinu Shalom would destroy it. But Hare Hein Ovdin, look what they do worship. Lachama, Lalavono, Lakechavim, Lamazoles, right? They worship the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets, Lathikav and Lageyurs, to the streams of water, to the valleys, and so on and so forth. So Ya'abed Eilami B'nei Shaitim, so you want the Rebbeinu Shalom to destroy the world because of those who are foolish? V'chein Hu Omer, and likewise it says, and then we go to the next sheet over there. I'm going to pass it down this way too. Is this the new one or the old one? No, this is the old one. Here's the new one. V'chein Hu Omer, and likewise in accordance with this, we find Nun Hei Omer Aleph, Asof Asaf Kol Me Al Pnei HaDavod Ne'um Hashem. If we read it as a statement, it would say, I will destroy everything from the earth. In other words, we would be talking about an apocalypse or something or other. That's all I say, from the Torah, you know. From that's Meshuggah in Persia who wants to destroy everything. But as Rashi points out, you have to say, this is a question. And as a question, what is Lord Meir Shalom saying? He says, Azof or Seif call me up there, shall I destroy everything upon the face of the earth? The Yom Hashem says the same. It says Hashem. Azof Odom of Ahema, Azof Hashemayim with the Gay Hayam, you want me to destroy man and beast, birds of the heaven, fish in the sea, Yemachshelo, says Horishoyim. And those things that are stumbling blocks to the wicked. In other words, you want me to destroy everything, even those things that, you know, form stumbling blocks that the wicked, that they do wrong because of them. V'chim ipnei sharoshoyim nechsholim b'hem. So because the wicked stumble against them, ya'abdei min ho'elam, should he destroy them from the world? But rather, he says, these people, they worship man, and the Yechrati is the Odom Yalpaneh Adamot. So you want me to destroy mankind from the face of the earth? Shall we have such a catastrophe that the entire world simply be destroyed because of the Rishoyim? It's not right, says Odom Yalpaneh. Shaul Agrippa Saltzvo, Agrippa, who was a Roman general, asked his Rabbi Gamliel, says, Ksibiso Hashem, it's written in your Torah, Ki Ad Hashem Elokecha Esh Ochlohu El Kano. We had that, you know, on the previous page too, in another version, right? That the Lord your God is a consuming fire, is a jealous God. Kolumis kane ela chochem bechochem, he says. When do we have jealousy, says Agrippa, he says. A person who is wise becomes jealous of another person who is wise. He's not going to be jealous of somebody who doesn't, is not his equal, right? The gibor be gibor, a person who is heroic or strong, right, will be jealous of another one. Be osher, be osher, right? Someone who is rich will be jealous of somebody else who is rich. So therefore, what is the equation? The equation is, so if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is jealous, he has to be jealous because the Avodah Zarah is his equal, right? This is what the Roman general was saying. So Amaloi, so Rabbi Gamliel said, Em Shalach HaMashal, right? I'll give you an example, he says. The Ma'adavat Eimeh, what is it like? The Odom Shenasa Isha Al Ishtei. Man marries another woman in addition to his wife. I mean, don't forget, in those days, polygamy was permitted, right? So he was married, and then he married another woman at the same time. So now he has two wives. Okay. Chashuvo mimeno, ein miskana bo. Bechuso mimeno, miskana bo. All right. If the original wife is a much more important person than the other one, so she's not going to be jealous of her. On the contrary, she'll look down upon her, right? But if the wife, the original wife, is pechusumimen, in other words, he marries a woman who is much better, more beautiful, more talented, whatever it may be, then the original wife is mekanerbah, right? She's going to be jealous of her. So likewise, of course, what do we have to understand? We have to understand that what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam have to be jealous of Avodah Zarah? No, because it doesn't mean anything. But, right, you can't compare. But do the idolaters have to be jealous of Yiddishkeit? The answer is yes. They do. And I don't have to tell you that throughout the ages there's been resentment against the Jews because of the higher standards that we stand for. First and foremost. Omalei Zunin lo Rabbi Akiva. A man by the name of Zunin said to Rabbi Akiva, and says, Libi v'libcho yoda t'averis rechovim lesbo mishosha. Literally, my heart and your heart. In other words, we both know in our hearts what? That Aveda Zorah, there's nothing really, nothing real in it. Mishosha means literally, you know, you can feel it, but that means that there's, another version might be, you know, like mamash. There's nothing in it, okay? Nothing real in it. The Koch Hazinun Gabre de Asle. So, nevertheless, we see that there are people who go. Kimitz Bore, be also Kimitz Mitzamde. Okay. So he says, we see people. Yeah, that's what he says. Okay. Says, Asa Kibisab. In other words, people who says, according to Rashi, Pischim. In other words, they are like lame people. Ha'olchim la'avedis kechovim, right? They go to the idol temple, right? Shenisporku avereihen. I'm reading the Rashi right now. Their limbs are broken. Machdas chuyim, because they are ill. V'chotzum be'vorah mitzumonim. And then when they return from the temple, what happens? They come back cured. Okay? I don't have to tell you, you know, that, like those people who go up to Saint Ada to pray and so on, or the people who go to Lourdes, you know, they go and somehow or other some of the colicers manage to to come back healed. So this is the situation, he says. Lord, you and I, he says, know that there are people who go to their Aveda Zorah, right? Their bones are broken, right? And they come back whole. Okay, my Tama. So tell me, why does this happen? This is a Jew, by the way, so I'm asking, you know, Rabbi Akiva, right? So, so Amalei. So Akiva answered, he said, Em Shalucha Moshe. I'll give you an example. L'ma'ad Ovedoyme, what is it like? He says, L'odom Ne'emon Shoyoviyeh. There was a person in a city who was absolutely upright. Ne'emon, literally faithful, right? He was an upright person. The Chol B'nei Yiro Hayom Afkin Netzlo Shalo Be'ed. Okay? Now, as you know, they didn't have necessarily vaults in those days. Instead, what was the practice back in the days of the Talmud? That you would entrust property to somebody else because you knew that that person would take care of it and would return it to you whole, okay? And of course, the Gemara... Hamafkid deals with precisely all kinds of situations, you know, where you entrust whether it's money or some other property and so on and so forth to somebody else that they should keep it for you, okay? So this man was so trustworthy, Ne'amon, right, that people would entrust their things to him without even a witness, right, to, you know, because they knew that they would get it back without any problem. So they didn't have to go through all the formalities and so on and so forth. Okay. So God's good. So a certain man came along and he entrusted his things to him with witnesses. Okay? Palm Echod, Shochach, the Hifkid Esel Shalobed. So, one time it happened that this person who always would come normally with witnesses, he forgot and he entrusted this man without any witnesses. So Omalei Ishtoi, so this man who was so faithful, his wife said to him, Bo Chaprena, let's go and deny the fact, that he entrusted it to you. Okay? Omar lo, so he said to her, if this person who is foolish did something that was not right, so should we therefore destroy our own faithfulness? Afkach, likewise, he says, Yisurin, similar to Yisurin. What are Yisurin? Yisurin, of course, yes, troubles, but usually it means like physical troubles, sickness, and so on and so forth. I mean, the word to begin with, Yisur, comes really from the root, the liyaser, which means to chastise. Why? Because to many people, the idea of sickness is that it is a punishment, a chastisement, right? Okay. And incidentally, another word derived from the same root is the word musar. I'm sure it's a word that you've heard. So you know that you try to teach people, what is the ethical way of living.
That's
so
musar.
Right, that's musar. So on. Because
also very interesting, the same root came to the Russian language. Musar means in Russian garbage.
Right,
oh,
right.
Really?
Yeah,
musar is garbage. Yeah. Very, very. Okay. So at any rate, so you say, all right, but you gave me the example, these people who are ill, right, and then they become cured. So I want to tell you, he says, Yisurin, when it comes to, to the physical problems, he says, Bishor Shemishagrin Oysen Al Hodon, Mashbin Oysen Shalotelhu Elabi Omploini, right? So, the Bene Shalom has, what shall I say, Malochim or something like that, the messages that he sends in order to bring about, this affliction to people. So they are sworn, Shalotelchu, you shouldn't go Elabion Plaini, go only on this day in order to start it, don't start it at any other time, right? Velotates U Elabion Plaini, and then you should bring a halt, an end to it, on this and this particular day. Or we shall plainly say on this and this particular hour. The other day plainly, right, and also you are to bring the cure, right, by so and so, in other words, let's say a doctor, right, who is appointed to carry out the cure by the Rebbeinu Shalom, because, don't forget, it's written, Kani Hashem Rofecha, I mean, that God is the one who heals us, right? But then we also have Rapo Yerape. You shall be healed, and our sages tell us that Rapo Yerape means Mekan Shadikma Rishus the Rofe Lerape. In other words, from here we learn the Torah that a doctor has been given the permission by the Rebbeinu Shalom to cure people. Okay? So, therefore, they are charged when to begin, the illness, but also when to end the illness, what day, what time, right? Through which doctor, okay? Are you doing some fighting, through what medication, okay? So Kevin Shehigiyas Manon says, so when the time comes for them to be healed, right? So Halach said Leves Havid. So I'm talking, getting again about this guy who went into the idol, the temple in order to be cured, and he came out cured, right? So he happened to come just on that particular time, particular day, into the temple, right? And that's the reason why, he was healed. Amru, they said, Yisurin din hu shelo neitze, right? So the messengers who bring about the Yisurin, they say, no, if this person is an idol worshiper, right, why should we go and cure him? The Chosun Yomim, and then when they think it over, they say, just because he's doing something that's not right, are we going to go back on the oath that we took to Rebbe Shalem to go and to cure him? Right? So, in other words, it was ordained for him, to be well, but it doesn't mean that Avodah Zorah, therefore, is the reason why it was. Okay. V'ahainu d'omer Rabbi Yochanan, and this is along the lines of what Rabbi Yochanan said, Mai d'chsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk which says, V'choloyim royim v'ne'er monim? This is in the Teichucho we find, right? Choloyim royim, which means, evil illnesses, v'ne'er monim, and faithful. It's a contradiction, right, in the language. By the way, the singular of Choloyim Royim would be what? Cholira. And what does Cholira sound like?
Cholera.
Exactly. Okay. So probably the word cholera in this particular case might be derived from a similar idea. I say might be. It's also possible that it's not the right of that, because in Greek it also could mean like inflammation or something like that. But it's interesting, to see the comparison. All right. So, what he wants to know, how come, these two words are contradictory, royim and ne'amonim? So he says, royim bishlichuson, right? They are evil when they are sent, to afflict a person, but the ne'amonim ishuason, nevertheless, they are faithful in carrying out the oath that they were, enjoined by the Rebbe Shlomo to come and to cure as well. He says, in our place there is an idol temple. So when the Olam needs rain, right? So the idol appears to them in a dream. The Omaluhu, and he says to them, to the idolaters, Shachtuli Gavra, kill a man for me. In other words, a sacrifice, right? Like, I don't have to tell you, there are plenty of examples of, people who were killed through idolatry, right? They ice a mitra, and rain will come. So, shachtu le'gavro, so they killed the person, the ice a mitra, and it rained, right? Yeah. So, Amale Ashta says, now, yehave shechivna, if I would die at this particular moment, le'amil lechu hamilso, then I would be unable to tell you a good vault to Omar Rav, which Rav said. He says, Maidichsiv, what is the meaning of the passage which says, Asher cholak ha-reshem lekecho isam nekol ho-amim? Why does the Torah say about the sun, the moon, the stars, and so on? It says that the Rebbeinu Shelolam portioned them out to all the nations. So Malamej Sheikh Likon Bidvorim Kedelotom Nahoilam, he says, the reason is to teach us, he says, that he caused them to slide in various things. In other words, by worshipping the idols, it sort of gave them permission to do all kinds of bad things. In order that in the end they should be punished. And this is along the lines of what Rav Shlokha says, what is the meaning of that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, with those people who are scoffers, so he scoffs at them. But those who are meek, right, those who are pious, to them, he gives them grace. Okay. Bolatamin, this is a famous teaching that we have, that when a person comes literally to commit profane things, okay, impure things, then then they open wide the opportunity for him, right? But if he comes in order to purify himself, then the sign also, then they help him. Meaning that Bodhatame Paschen Lo, right? But who do they help? They help the people have choice to do whatever that they want to. But what does the Rebbeinu Shel want to do? He wants to help us to do that which is right. Okay, so we'll stop at this point. Continue next week with a new Mishnah at the bottom of the page. Right, tonight is January the 10th, the year 2007, and we're continuing now at the bottom of Avodah Zorah, Nun Hei Omid Aleph, 55A, with a new mission. At this particular point, we go back again to the business of Yei Nesach in greater detail than we did previously, way back several weeks ago when we talked about all kinds of kashrus prohibitions at that time. You know, things that we're familiar with, like Chol of Israel, Pasakum, and stuff like that and so on, okay? So, and Yei Nesach, of course, and then, of course, Yei Nesach literally is wine poured as libation. And then we also have what we call Stam Yeinom, which means the goy is not going to use as a libation, but in general we don't use wine that a goy has touched. So this is now going to be the subject area for the next few weeks, okay? All right. Mishnah begins by saying, Leichen gas be'uto min o'evet kechovim, afal pishin o'teo b'yot o'evet, v'neisen tatuach. Okay. All right. So the Mishnah begins by saying that you're allowed to purchase, lokeach in the Hebrew, and the Mishnah itself, the Mishnah means not simply take, it means also to buy something. Okay. And this is the sense in which we have to understand it over here. You're allowed to purchase a threshing, I guess it's a threshing floor or something like that. This is for wine. For wine, they use the word gas. And naturally, how did they make wine in those days? So they took grapes and they put them into this gas, whatever you want to call it, okay, the vat. And then they had, you know, people trample on it. Okay, you've seen that in pictures, moving pictures, I'm sure. Okay. I don't guarantee that there were beautiful shiksas doing the job the way they do it in Italy, maybe, but this was the way it was done. Okay. So
it must really be antiseptic or antibiotic. Think about it.
Yeah, well, the alcohol itself.
The alcohol,
right, except that it's not alcohol yet at this stage.
No. But when it becomes alcohol, it's
used. Yeah, but it's not become alcohol as yet. Okay. So, you can buy then a vat which has been trampled on, okay, from a goy. Even though he actually has been taking the grapes in his hand, no to the other, right? And then what does he do? He puts them into a heap. In other words, you know, first he puts in the grapes, then they trample upon it, okay? And then what does he do? Well, in the trampling, obviously, some of the juice is going to run down, right? So where does it run down? So first of all, it can run down to the bottom of the vat itself. But from that particular point, what did they do? They had a pipe or something, or they used a container or something in order, you know, the juice. But the particularly, you will see that they had what they called a bore. What is a bore? Bore is a hole in the ground that you make that can hold water in it, or it can hold liquid. So they built a bore underneath it. The English word for that is a cistern, okay? Fancy word, mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
It's got nothing to do with this Swedish word. What's a brunna?
A brunna? That's a well.
A well.
A well, right. A brunna, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What's the word?
A brunna. I would say a brunna, but I have an emet here. Yeah. But it means a well, you know, that you get water out of it. Right?
So
yeah.
With a vacuum, like a sieve, I mean, would it be like a vacuum, you know, something where the juices can go down?
Yeah. There was a pipe or something, in other words,
that they had.
There was a hole in the bottom over there. So, okay, right. So in the meantime, of course, the grapes that had already been trampled on, what does the goy do? He takes it and he puts it into a heap, and more of the juice, you know, goes down because of the weight of the grapes. This is the general idea. So this word tapuach that we see over here, of course, in modern Hebrew, if I would say to you tapuach, it's an apple, right? Or tapuach adama, a potato, right? We have, of course, shortened versions of tapuach zahav, which was an orange, literally a golden tapuach, right? And so tapuach by itself, an apple. Tapuach zahav, orange.
So
tapuach adama, a potato. Yeah.
Is it tomato related? Do they give it
no.
Like that?
The Hebrew word for that is agbadia.
Agbadia.
What is the meaning of the word agbadia? It comes from a root, which means love.
Lost,
right, love apples. So that's why they made it. They made up the word agbadia for that, right? But over here, tapuach means simply that they make it like a swollen heap, which is really the original meaning of the word. I mean, why an apple? Because it looks swollen, okay? And you find it, for example, in the middle of the Mizbeach, in the Beis HaMikdash. They would, you know, shove the burning embers together over there and form a heap, and that's referred to as the tapuach also. So here, the tapuach means simply, he makes these rotten grapes, and he makes a heap of them. All right. So, but the Mishnah here says at the beginning is that you're allowed to buy a vat from a goy, even though he has, with his own hands, gathered these grapes that already have been trodden and pushed them and made it, you know, a heap of them. So, this is what it says so far. Okay. And it does not become yay nesach. Remember, that's the wine that's prohibited to a Jew because it was used as libation, right? So it doesn't become yay nesach until the juice actually, that is, that would be grape juice, right? That goes down into this cistern, into this pit. where they hold it, okay? At that point, when the liquid begins to gather over there, at that particular point, it becomes Yei Nesach.
It's got nothing to do with fermentation.
Not yet. Not yet. Fermentation will start after. It's still grape juice at this point. This is why for centuries we were using only wine for Kiddush. But, you know, a lot of people can't take wine. They can't take alcohol. So therefore, what happens? So you have grape juice. But I know people who felt, you know, grape juice, what was... You know, I'm talking about kettle grape juice, or, you know, or Kayak, whatever I think you can get on the market today. I'm not talking about, you know, Welch's grape juice, right. And are you allowed to make the Brocha Mori Pri HaGefen over it? The answer is yes. They decided that you can, and you may use it even for Pesach, for the four kaisers, and so on and so forth. So, because even though, you know, it is, right, even though it's only juice at this point, but still, it counts as grape juice, it counts as wine, even though it's not fermented, okay? When Ann and I got married 63 years ago, we went out to the wilderness called Niagara Falls. We lived over there for approximately a half year after we were married. And, well, a little more. At any rate, we didn't have any of the amenities that we were used to in New York. So, Anne's mother gave her a netzer. And she said to her, you take raisins and you cook them. And that's what they use for Kiddush. So, we did it.
Right.
Went into the corner grocery in order to buy some sour cream. So the proprietor says to me, oh, we don't let our cream stay that long for it to become sour.
We traveled to Pennsylvania and asked for egg cream.
No.
And they said they don't serve eggs, they don't serve cream. You know what the egg cream is? It's a drink,
There's no egg and there's no cream in it.
There's no egg and
there's no cream in it. Right. The only place they use that expression is in Brooklyn.
New York. Oh. Okay. So,
yeah,
right,
egg cream,
right. So, getting back over here, okay, so at what point, according to the Mishnah, does it become Yei Nesach? It becomes Yei Nesach once it gathers together in the pit that is being. All right, so far so good. I'll just take a ship to Mishnah, okay? We'll see. But the Gemara, they question it, okay. Yorad Labor, to finish this part of the Mishnah, once it's down there in this pit, right? Mashababor Asur, so whatever is in the pit, this is prohibited because it's Yei Nesach. Vihashabor Mutor, but the rest of it, meaning what? Whatever is probably still left in the vat, that would still be permitted. Alright, so that's how the Mishnah starts out. Next. Dorchim in ho'evet kechavim bagas. Avol, of course, is to continue in the Mishnah on the next page. Avol lo batrit imo. Okay? Says that if a goy is trampling grapes, you're allowed to trample with him. In other words, to a certain extent, you can employ, let's say, a goy as an employee for this particular stage of the game, right?
The feet are okay, the hands are not. That's very interesting.
Pardon me?
It's okay if he does it with his feet, but you're not supposed to handle it.
Okay. Very good observation. Okay. as we'll see, there are contrary views also. But this is what the Mishnah so far says, okay? Aval lo botrinimo, but we're not allowed to harvest together with him. Why not? So here we have to take a look at what Rashi has to say on the top of the page over there. Aval lo botrinimo, he says, lefish enostim begas b'meyo, begorim tumo. All right. Because what the goy is doing is that in the vet he is introducing something, you know, which is unclean, impure, and as a result it brings about tumor, it brings about impurity. Well, except you can't really translate, you know, tara and tumor. Maybe understand the general concept. So, that therefore, prior, according to Rashi, prior to trampling, it wouldn't make any difference whether it's a goy or a Jew who's there. But once you started in to trample, then the fear is what? The fear is that tumor will be caused. And of course, we have to eat what kind of food? Food that's pure. Okay. It's a very difficult concept because today, you know, we don't hold so much with tar and tumah. We try. But it's a problem.
Does it say why the tumah would be? Is it because the feet might not be clean?
The feet might not be clean, exactly. Or maybe his hands, he might have done, he may have touched something with his hands. And we have a general concept in Tara and Tumah that the hands are always getting involved in all kinds of things. So that this is the basic reason why. So because of this fear, so they don't want him to do any harvesting with him. It's, as I say, these concepts are a little bit foreign to us because we're not living in the kind of a civilization, you know, where this is being done right now.
Okay. Are we talking about harvesting or trampling?
It's really harvesting that we're still talking about, but why they use the word botrin, I don't know. Okay. Or...